a special guest that you need to hear from next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy and your host. Along with me as well is my co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And we're in a remote studio today, which means any place where we got enough room to set up a computer, a mix board, and three microphones.
That's right. Have sound, we'll travel.
That's right.
Us. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, over the past few months, we've been talking about a lot of issues on this program. But today, tomorrow, and Saturday, if you stay with us through this series, you're going to learn a lot more about an issue that's going to hit you closer to home than just about any other issue we've talked about on this program. We have a special guest with us today in studio, and he's going to be sharing with you an extensive amount of background about issues that are going to be in your backyard, and I mean that literally, probably in your kitchen, in your dining room, maybe even in your bedrooms, before you know it. So listen close, call some friends on your cell phone, get them listening in, and stay with us as we welcome Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. And I'm going to turn it over to Chuck because, Chuck, you've had a little history with Tom.
Tom and I first met, at least officially, at a little function down in the Atlanta, Georgia area, south of Atlanta, Georgia, at a conference that was supposed to be gigantic, and the promoter, for some inexplicable reason, moved the date 2 weeks before the thing started. And so it was a whole bunch of us exhibitors and some of the speakers sitting around chatting. Well, we took Tom out to dinner, and very interestingly, he was from Newark, Ohio, and I was from Hebron, Ohio. And you may not know where Hebron is. It's in, also in Licking County. And Tom said, we asked him how he got his start in the conservative movement, and he said, I used to go out to this bookstore in Hebron, and there was this woman that ran this bookstore, this conservative bookstore out there, and I used to go out there and buy books and read articles and do all kinds of things. And I said, well, Tom, if you look across the table, you'll see that woman. That's my mother over there, and that was our American Opinion bookstore. We've had Tom to Camp American, and that's www.campamerican.com. We've had Tom to Camp American several years, I don't know, 7 or 8 times. I don't know how many. I don't know, whatever this coming year makes. And Tom will be with us again this year. I know Tom has been active in a number of liberty issues for, gosh, 40 years.
43 years.
Yeah, I hate to bring up those kinds of numbers. Good, 43 years. Even better. And I know you ran for State House at one point.
I ran for the state legislature in 1974 against Mike Stenziano in the 30th House District in Columbus, Ohio. That was quite an experience. He was a real media hound, and we ended up matching each other word for word on the news. So we had quite a battle.
Yeah, well, Mike basically had a safe seat there for years and years and years, and I don't know how he finally got run out. I think they changed the district lines or something.
I understand there was some sort of a insurance scandal.
I seem to recall something about that.
But yeah, it was a district designed specifically for a liberal Democrat. It had Ohio State University on one end and the welfare district on the other end, and threw in a Republican ward just for good measure.
Yeah, of course.
I ran the year of Watergate, so I had everything going for me that year. but the interesting thing was that for 18 years, every time I'd come back to Columbus, I'd meet the next victim in the grinder, and they would ask me how I did what I did, because I held the record for doing the best against him of anybody for all those years. And we spent a whole $1,500 on that campaign.
And you know
which with inflation and today's prices is about what you would really need to spend in order to stay in a race anymore.
And you know what? The Franklin County Party still runs the way they seek office in Columbus that way. They just simply line up people who agree to be mutilated in elections.
Well, actually, they did not want me to run.
I went
to see the party chairman, and he said, we'll have to go through a screening committee. And I said, I'm not going through anybody's screening committee. And they had a county convention, and we suddenly threw our hat in a ring at the county convention and won the nomination there, and there was nothing they could do about it. They were not happy.
And, you know, that's the way you have to do it in Franklin County these days, too, it appears.
That's about the big problem, though, is instead of just one district where they have what we call a sacrificial lamb candidate, they've now seated so much in Franklin County that there are a number of districts that are sacrificial lamb seats.
Yeah, exactly. Tom, I'm really interested in what's happening now. We've gotten through the stuff that was the Watergate era, which is now fading rapidly into many of our memories. You're slightly older than I am, not much. I want to know what you're doing these days, especially what the American Policy Center has going. You can tell me generally to start with, give us all the information, the contact information, all that stuff, what people can expect and what they need to sign up for on your website.
Okay. Yeah, well, first of all, the American Policy Center, I founded that about 1986, founded it to be an organization that fought for the principles of individual liberty and limited government, free enterprise, and particularly in property rights became an issue that I was very, very concerned with. We started out working, trying to stop the transformation of our education system, Goals 2000, School to Work, Workforce Development Boards. We were the number one organization fighting against the establishment of Workforce Development Boards. We lost all those battles. But property rights, I began to notice around the country horror stories coming out all over the country of people, ranchers, farmers, people in the timber industry, particularly out in the West, losing their land, the massive government land grabs. And so I began to study this, and we began to find out that the beloved environmental movement, the benevolent environmental movement, the most popular movement of its time back in the late 80s and early 90s, wasn't exactly what it said it was. It wasn't about protecting the environment. There was a complete agenda afoot here to literally transform the way we live, transform our way of life in America, transform our government, to fit kind of a top-down control where everything was based on the environment. And so I began to get involved in that, saw that the Sierra Club no longer was what it had been in the past, an organization that was concerned about the environment, and now it was moving this agenda, and it was becoming the most powerful movement in the country. And we tried to expose the environmental movement for what it was, had our head handed to us several times as we went after the Nature Conservancy and the Sierra Club and so forth. So step by step, we tried to find ways to get people to hear what we were saying about this. And then, of course, we'll talk about this in a minute, but 1982, when the UN put together the Earth Summit, and the term sustainable development began to be heard in policy all over the country. Once we were able to start to make that connection, we were beginning to make some other connections. People began to hear, oh, this is UN-driven, therefore that's not a good thing. And we began to chip away at the shining armor of the environmental movement and show what was really underneath. So.
And it's interesting you say that, because Barry and I have done a number of shows recently talking about how essentially, little by little, slowly but surely, the facade on the global warming or climate change movement is being chipped away. For instance, we ran a show, I think runs today, day where we are, when I say today, we're recording this interview, that some scientists have looked at the Himalayan ice melt, and the phrase that was used was a very interesting loaded phrase, that the change in the amount of ice in the Himalayas in the last 10 years has not been significantly different than zero.
That's good. My friend Willie Soon, who is a scientist on the issue, has written several articles on it, one entitled, "It's the Sun, Stupid."
We've had a little chat about that on this program as well. Yeah. Well, you know, Tom, in addition to everything that you've been doing in the environment, I mean, your pedigree in the what we call the conservative movement. Now, if, for those who folks who listen to us regularly, they know that we kind of decry modern conservatism as being an empty suit. When we're talking about the kind of conservatism that Tom's been involved in, we're talking about people who actually understand what their goals are, what the focus is, and what they're trying to get the policies of this country back to. Not just chasing along after where it's going and stopping, 5 feet behind it and saying, this line and no further. Okay, this line and no further. Okay, this line and no further. Yeah. That's the kind of conservatism that we're all sick of. But Tom, you've done so much in this arena, and honestly, it's gone totally unheralded in many quarters, but that's part of the reason why, we want to try to get you out and on the radio program here and in other places. But you have had an interesting, from being like the only non-governmental observer to the first Panamanian elections, and to dealing with leaders across the globe. I remember when you came up to camp and you did a presentation on this whole issue. You've actually had personal meetings with a gentleman by the name of Hernando de Soto, who wrote a book called The Mystery of Capital. And folks, I'm telling you, go out and get that book tomorrow, okay? It is a very important book. But Tom, share with us a little bit about those things, and then we're going to roll right
real
back
quick,
in.
Like, by the way, available on our Amazon store.
That's right, at principledpolicy.com. Come and visit us and buy a book.
Yeah, first of all, through all those formative years from the late 60s to up through the 70s and 80s, I was learning philosophy, and I was learning economics, got a very solid root base of what I believe and what I believe government should be, and that is what I fight for. And what I believe is happening to the conservative movement today is that everything is issue oriented, and are we for this one or that one? Do we support this guy or that guy? Work for this presidential campaign or not? And that root philosophy that helps you make that decision doesn't seem to exist. And I'll be quite honest with you. The last several years that I've gone to CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee conference, we used to co-sponsor that. I did it for about 10 years. I don't recognize these people anymore. I don't recognize the message that's coming from the podium, the people who are attending. I'm sorry if I hurt people's feelings saying that, but this is a whole different atmosphere.
So you're saying Ann Coulter may not truly be a conservative?
She bit me once.
We had just chatted about that on an earlier program about Romney using the term conservative or conservatism in his 10-minute speech 24 times at CPAC just last weekend. Yeah. So.
Well, you had George Bush and his compassionate conservatives. What's that? I happen to believe
soft socialism.
Yeah, exactly. I happen to believe that a movement that believes in the individual being able to make his own decisions about his life, not having some government bureaucrat decide this is how you're going to live. I happen to believe that a government that allows the individual to make those kind of decisions about his life and his family is compassionate, and the other kind is tyranny. And so I don't need to have somebody define it as compassionate. This means government's going to be nicer to me.
So you believe in allowing someone the freedom to fail and therefore to learn from their mistakes if they're capable of doing that.
Yeah, they have the freedom to fail, they have the freedom to succeed, and they have the freedom to take their life where they want it to be.
In this environment we're in today, Tom, talking about that kind of freedom becomes fighting words.
Well, one of the interesting things that we're facing right now is, as we're fighting on the property rights issue, is what's your definition of property rights? Because if I were to say to you that the definition of property rights is, this is my property, step across that line and you're mine. You violated my property rights. If I want to, take action to throw you off that land, people who are listening to this now are saying, whoa, that's pretty violent. Have the right to shoot me if I cross your property. That used to be the definition. My home is my castle. So now we are so used to government saying you can't put booby traps on your property, you can't stop people from hunting on your property, you can't do this, you can't do that. If you have a swimming pool and somebody violates your property and crawls on it, crawls over the fence and gets in your pool and drowns, you're liable. If somebody comes in your home and attacks you and you shoot them coming in the window, you're liable. I guess you disrupted their place of work. I don't know.
Well, it could be considered now a workplace harassment issue if you shoot an intruder who's breaking in.
And you mentioned Hernando de Soto. Hernando de Soto's book, The Mysteries of Capital, Why It Works in the West and Nowhere Else, his whole point is the way out of poverty is private property ownership, where you can use it for equity and build your wealth that way. 60% of the businesses in this country are mom-and-pop companies that were created through equity in their private property. And, this is what does not exist in most of the world. And that's why you have this massive poverty in places. He calls it dead capital, all the land that nobody is allowed to own, nobody is allowed to build from it. And he's on a crusade to try to change that.
Well, we call this biodiversity zones in the U.S. now, don't we?
Right. Yeah. And that is basically absolutely dead capital. And the United States is very rapidly sinking into a third world status, and one of the major reasons for that is because we are eliminating private property rights in this country.
And Tom, that's what we're going to talk about some more on tomorrow's program. And folks, stay with us tomorrow. Tom's going to be back. We're going to be talking more about private property issues and why you need to get engaged in the fight to defend the rights that we've been guaranteed in our founding documents. So join us tomorrow, 5:30 again, for another Principles and Policies, and we'll be back, and we hope you are too.